how he delivered so many sermons without a laptop, his phone, or one of these devices, but seemed to be able to figure it out. This morning I wanted to talk a little bit about what our focus is in life, or the idea of being content. What are your focuses or desires in life? I think that we often can get kind of confused a little bit. Maybe your You have a magic button, Mikey? Still on up there.
Do you need this right now?
I was going to use it, yeah.
Right this minute?
Mm-hmm. Maybe, maybe not. No, yeah, that's fine. But it's not up there yet. Oh, okay. All right. Like I said, it's funny that they never mentioned Jesus' IT guy's name. Mine is most certainly Mikey. So like I said, it seems like a lot of times on our day-to-day basis, we are maybe confused as to what our priorities should be, but ultimately just how content we are and what we should be content with. It seems like often maybe we are focused more on money. Or having worldly possessions. So you might be money. Maybe it would be a big house or a mansion to live in. Maybe it might be a cool car. Yes, that's on my list. Or maybe a big boat would be what you think about on a day-to-day basis, what you focus on wanting to get or purchase. I put a couple items on there, and I kind of thought, well, maybe what, I don't know for sure what the ladies might want, but I put some jewelry on there. Maybe that's your focus or something that you are wanting on an ongoing basis. Speaking of ladies or women, a lot of people, I think, if you're younger, you're searching for a mate or a spouse, and maybe you're confused as to what is important to look for in a wife, or I didn't forget you ladies, in a husband. The idea of being content is hard, and I want to look a little bit at what we should be content with instead of all those things that we just saw right there. I decided that there's two different types of uncontentness, and no, uncontentness is not a word, or so my computer told me, but I hit the learn button, so I guess it's a word now and I'm going to use it. The first one is possessions or worldly things, or physical things. And I don't know if you've ever noticed what that leads to is that you're never happy. If you rent your house, you always dream of owning your own house. Once you own your own house, then you want a bigger one, or one with a better view, or one with a pool, or whatever the case might be. If you don't have a car, you wish for a car. Once you have a car, then you want a newer one, one that has the fancy electronics and all the bells and whistles, or maybe a faster car. You get a job, you wish you had a better one. Once you have a better one, you wish you had a better boss. Once you got a better boss, then you wish you had better pay. The list is endless of always wanting and never being happy. I want to look at a few different verses that kind of explain what that line of thinking leads to, or how it's vanity. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 5:10. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. So, I mean, it says it right there that he who loves silver won't be happy with it, or abundance, that it's never ending, and that you're never happy. Another example of this is in Mark 10. Starting in verse 17. Now as he was going on the road, one came running, knelt before him, and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?" So Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. You know the commandments: do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness, do not defraud, honor your father and your mother. And he answered and said to him, "Teacher, these things have I kept from my youth." Jesus, looking at him and loved him, and said to him, "One thing you lack. Go your way, sell whatever you have, and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come take up the cross and follow me." But he was sad at this word, and went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. So in this story here, it's not that he had great possessions that was the problem. It was obvious that the problem was that his great possessions is what he really took to heart, or valued, or put first in his life. And then when the call came to get rid of those, that was a hard thing for him to overcome. And it said that he was sad and was left sorrowful. Kind of on the same note, we talked about looking for a spouse. Let's look at Proverbs 25:24. Once again, in life, when you're looking for a spouse, you may envision having a perfect person, or often by today's standards, it needs to be a beautiful person. And it's often not the right way to look at it. Proverbs 25:24, "It is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than a house shared with a contentious woman." And there's lots of different verses in the Bible, but I'll make it very clear that if you picked out somebody maybe based upon the wrong features or aspects of who they were, then it says here that it's better to live up on the roof than with that person. One other one I'd like to look at would be Luke 12, starting in verse 15. This is another story that makes it clear as to what maybe our focus really should be. Luke 12, starting in verse 15. "And he said to them, 'Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses.'" That kind of says it all right there. I don't even know if I need to go on anymore. "For one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." But then he goes on to say, He spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What should I do, since I have no more room to store up my crops?' So he said, 'I'll do this. I'll pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.'" So in this story here, his focus was all about how he could become wealthier or have more possessions. In Bible times, they didn't have mansions, Porsches, and big boats or jewelry or those things that I showed, but often a person's wealth was measured in either animals or crops and that kind of thing, since that was the source of wealth in those days. And here, his focus was solely on that. But at the end of it, it says that his soul is going to be required of him. And obviously, the focus should not be on worldly possessions, but maybe his eternal soul. Another thought that I think that we can get from some scriptures is that maybe less is better. And that's very much not our line of thinking. Less being better? No, more is always better. A couple of verses that kind of show maybe the opposite of that. Another one from Ecclesiastes 4:6. "But a handful with quietness, then both hands full, together with toil and grasping for the wind." So it says that one handful, but with quietness, is better than two handfuls. It also mentions the idea there of grasping for the wind, which if you've ever tried to do, then is obviously not something that you can ever achieve. The other one that I want to look at was Proverbs 17. Verse 1. "Better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife." And so here, a better is a dry morsel, or to me, that's kind of like a scrap. A morsel is not very big, and it's dry. But better that than having a whole lot, but with a bunch of strife. I mentioned that there's kind of two different types of uncontentedness. There's that good word again. One is kind of a physical. To me, the other is somebody who's just always unhappy. I'm sure that you guys all have some of those people that you either deal with or family members or whatever. I call them Eeyores, because if you ever watch Winnie the Pooh, no matter what, Eeyore is always unhappy, often reciting that he's off to go look for his tail. I was a little disheartened that almost all pictures I looked for Eeyore showed him with a tail, but and you see those people in your lives where no matter what happens, you know, something great will happen to them, and you think, that'll make that person be happy. They won't be so doom and gloom anymore. But no, they're still unhappy. It's like they just look for the things to be unhappy with as opposed to the things to be happy about. A couple verses that show a better way to think about life or your day-to-day basis would be Proverbs 15:13. "A merry heart makes a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart the spirit is broken." And another one would be Proverbs 17:22. "A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones." I like the idea there that it says a merry heart does good like medicine, and that also in today's society, often when we have any kind of thing that ails us, we're off to the doctor and we need some medicine to make us better. And right here it says that a merry heart does good like medicine. To me, that's so true, in that if you have a cheerful, or merry is the word that uses here in this verse, outlook on life, then generally speaking, every day is going to be a pretty good day. Some people, I think, get out of bed and they think of like the 10 things that are going to happen that day, and one of them is going to be unpleasant, and then that's all they think about for the rest of the day. Whereas they could focus on the other 9 items that are going to be really good, but they let the minor unpleasantries drag them down. Today, I kind of mentioned a couple times there, you know, today or in today's society, and I'll say America, I believe, has become a nation of I want it now, not a nation of I'm happy with what I've got. I've got a lot, but it's a nation of not just wanting, but as our thing here says, they want it now. Or maybe even more dangerous of a line of thought would be not just wanting, but I deserve it. Or it's owed to me, and has led, I think, a lot to today's society of always wanting more than what they've got, or wanting it now. I wanted to look at a couple of different verses here that show maybe a little bit more of our what our mind thinking should be. In Hebrews 13:5, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. This verse to me is nice in that it talks a little bit there at the beginning. It says, be content with such things as you have. Doesn't get any simpler than that. And then also mentions maybe a little bit more about what we should be focused on. And that's he's going to be there. He's not going to forsake us. Also in Psalms 37, verse 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. And to me, that's kind of a good hint as to maybe what we should be focused on. And it says to wait patiently for him. Him being Jesus. And both of those verses that I read, it didn't say, you know, wait patiently for your fancy car or new jewelry. Both verses hinted at the idea that we're waiting for something else to come, and that we should be doing so patiently. One thing I kind of wanted to mention is that the line of thinking of not focusing on worldly things or being content with what you have, I think can also have a dangerous side to it, in that a lot of people will use that as an excuse to, you know, sit by and basically do nothing, in that, well, I don't need to do that, or I don't need to work hard or do anything else, because I'm not worried about worldly things, and so I can just sit back and really not do much of anything. A couple of verses I think that really show that also is not the right line of thinking. Revelation 3:2. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain, that they that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God. So it says that we are still to be working on things. Here it says you have not found your works to be perfect before God. So we should always ever be striving to working harder, maybe working harder for God, as opposed to worldly possessions. But that, you know, if we're not perfect before God, then we should always be trying to get closer to that, or on that path. Another one, Hebrews 6:12. That you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit promises. So it says not to be sluggish, but that we are to seek the inheritance as we have something greater to come. And kind of on that note, what should we be content with? There's lots of verses in the Bible that talk about that maybe we should just be content with food. Proverbs 30 verse 8 is one of those. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me. And there's lots of verses that talk about either just your clothes or your daily bread, and that you should be content with those, as that one mentions there. But I think that that's not really what we should be content with. And I think a couple of verses that will give us a better idea of that is in Philippians 4:12. Paul hints at something that I think that food and clothing is not what we should be content with. Philippians 4:12. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So it says there that he can be content, but then it also mentions that he's content to be hungry. And so that to me implies that just food is not really what we should be content with. The verse to me that really summarizes what we should be content with is Lamentations 3, 26. It is good that one should hope and wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. And that's, I think, kind of what Paul was hinting at, that there's more than what this world has to offer. Not some of the lavish things that we may all wish for, not some of the basic things that we may hope for as far as food and clothing, but in this verse here, for the salvation of the Lord. And if you could imagine if we could all just be content that we have salvation. That to me is a hard thought to grasp, and that our every single day items that we do are so focused on other things that I feel like we often lose perspective of really what we're here to do, and that's one, to gain our own salvation, and two, to instruct others how to gain theirs. And kind of on that note, if you want to be content with salvation, then that means that you have to have salvation. So if you do obviously don't have it, then you can't be content with it. So you might be asking, you know, how do I get my salvation? And or what, you know, some of our rewards, salvation, this is maybe a picture of heaven. I don't know if it's quite a realistic picture of heaven as far as what we're hoping for. But the way to get there would be through Jesus. And there's a couple different things that you would have to do to gain your salvation. One, you have to acknowledge that the path or your focus that you've been, the way you've been going is wrong, and then choose to do better or refocus your life. You need to believe in Jesus and that he is the Son of God and that he died on a cross for your sins. And then be baptized. Before being baptized, we ask you to confess that you do believe Jesus is the Son of God. And the best part about my sermon today is that I commented to you that we're a nation of I want it now. And if you should want your salvation now, the good news is we can do it right now. So that maybe goes against what I just had earlier said, but if you are wanting to accept Jesus and be baptized, then we are ready to do it right now. All you have to do is just come forward as we lead this next song, sit on the front pew here, and that'll start the process. So if we can help you in that, we'll do so. Do come forward as we sing this song.